Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Two Bros, One Flick. Andy, Sam, Mr. A, and Mr. B. Mr. B, your triumphant return. How are you?
Indeed, I'm well. I've been pining for the time I came back.
Oh, nice. Nice. Today we're going to talk about... This is the last one, guys. Mr. Yeah. A, how do you feel about this? It's strange.
Yeah, it's a little bittersweet, guys, but you know what? Had to come to an end sometime, so...
What a long, strange trip it's been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this summer especially. There's been lots of cool movies. I think we ended off with a big, you know, we finished off with probably the best movie to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
And Sam and I were talking about this because we started off, if we did five movies in a row.
Yeah.
And one of those movies was Tree of Life.
Yeah, Terrence Malick's epic
coming-of-age
story.
Right? And then we finish it off with what we're going to talk about today.
Which is Richard Linklater's epic.
Is that planned?
No.
Just a symmetry that happened to come up.
Place.
You know, I wanted the dinosaur in this one, too, but Linklater did not.
He just didn't do it.
No.
He let us down.
No, let's talk about... I guess this movie got a lot of hype before it even started. I think it's after at Sundance... buzz started happening, and I'm curious to hear about what you guys heard, Mr. A and Mr. B, before this movie even dropped in Lubbock. What have you heard about this movie?
I just read something about it in the New York Times about how Richard Linklater had shot this film over a period of 12 years and then got the same cast together like for three or 4 days out of every year to do the movie. And other than that, I really didn't know anything about it. And, you know, when I saw Richard Linklater's name attached to it, you know, I genuinely respect him and, you know, Texas boy representing on the independent film circuit. And I think that's always great for, you know, independent film and for, just for movie telling in general, because let's face it, guys, I mean, Hollywood ain't going to make shit like this.
No, they wouldn't even green light anything near this.
This is an IFC film.
Yeah. The risk value on this, like getting a 6-year-old boy and like say, I'm going to follow him till he's 18.
Sure.
Like there's no way they would sign on to that.
No.
I saw a Linklater on The Daily Show, which was
really
good.
Yeah,
and Jon Stewart in particular was just gushing about how amazing it was.
It's like a giddy schoolgirl.
Yeah, totally. And that's technically his job to do that, but you could really tell that he was just completely...
He was sincere.
Yeah, he was floored.
It blew his mind.
He's always sincere, but like this is like a different level.
Exactly,
He couldn't express it. It was just in his face the whole time. Yeah. But this movie, I think, is very interesting because, like they said... 12-year span, right? I watched a Richard Roper review because he's an authority.
Everything
gets a B+ from him. But this one got an A+. And I think one of the things that he liked about it, too, he's like, you know, so much of this stuff could have gone wrong, right? You can halfway through the film, you could realize, man, this kid fucking sucks at acting.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, somebody could have fucking died.
Yeah,
right.
And since his daughter was in the movie, like there were a bunch of times where she was really upset.
Not happy.
I'll get to that later, but
yeah. But I mean, it's a unique film from the get go, and I guess Sam, why don't you give us a quick synopsis, and then we'll start talking about what sets this film apart.
So Linklater refers to this too in some of the interviews, but really the movie isn't about anything in particular. It's about this kid named Mason who is kind of like a surrogate for Linklater himself. Because it kind of follows what happened to Linklater during his childhood from the time his parents divorced when he was 5 to, I guess, like when he went to college. And so the movie, you know, goes across that entire span from when Mason, who is the main character, from when he's 5 to when he goes to, is it UTEP?
Right? We're guessing UTEP.
UT El Paso, for those of you who are not, you know, Texas. All the little things that happen in between every year, like kind of big milestones, like his first kiss and like things like that. So
yeah, they didn't. This is a spoiler.
What I
said that he didn't get into his first bang.
No, they didn't.
Probably because it'd be too young and it'd be awkward.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking.
It just kind of goes across that span as his. He's always with his mom and his sister. His mom is played by Patricia Arquette. Oh, yeah. Mason is played by Eller Coltrane, who previously worked with Richard Linklater in Fast Food Nation.
Any relation to John Coltrane?
No.
Yeah.
I hope not.
better not be. This movie will take 2 points off.
Patricia Arquette plays his mom. Ethan Hawke plays his dad. And Lorelai Linklater, who is Richard Linklater's daughter, plays his sister. And those are really the four main characters that are constant throughout. Basically, he just hops all around Texas as his mom, you know, divorces and finds new people. And
yeah, it's interesting. It's almost, man, there's so much to talk about. Do you guys want to just dive into it right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. All right. Let's talk. Let's have a round of. Let's do this, Mr. B. You have a mic in your hand.
Yeah.
What stuck out to you, and then we'll just talk about the thing that something that you want to talk about right now about this movie.
The thing that stuck out to me primarily was his relationship to his father, Ethan Hawke.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, it was like Ethan played this. Displaced father who was never with him, right. And you could tell that like he didn't financially support him.
He was kind of a mm-hmm. deadbeat dad.
Yeah, he definitely exactly right.
For sure,
but not like you know was he wasn't intentionally a deadbeat
right.
dad.
He just didn't have like, any money. Yeah, he was just like wandering around all yeah all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
It's a fuck up. Yeah,
but in spite of that, you could tell at every scene that he was in there with Mason that he loved the shit out of his son.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And Samantha.
Yes, exactly. And so it puts you in a really interesting place because you're with Patricia Arquette and she's kind of navigating her own kind of life as we'll talk about later with multiple husbands thereafter. Mm-hmm. But you know that this is happening in the background of her getting no financial support and you just, like hear her tough times. Then here comes the cool dad and like the GTO, like he swoops in and like they have a good time. But he's legitimately a very, very good father. The father-son story here was really, really nice.
I think the mother-son story was great, too.
Yeah.
Mr. A, what do you have to add about this Ethan Hawke aspect to the movie?
Well, you know, I think you can tell that there is some real chemistry that Ethan Hawke had with this young actor.
Right.
And you can tell that, I think Ethan Hawke's a father himself, and so...
A couple of Uma Thurman's kids.
So, I mean, that relationship, it didn't come off across as contrived. It seemed like something, it seemed like it was a very naturalistic performance. Yeah. And I think that that was a very sweet part of the movie because it was juxtaposed against that bitterness of the horrible things that are going on in Patricia Arquette's character's life.
Yes.
I mean,
struggle.
Yeah, she having to ping pong back and forth from husband to husband and figuring out what she's going to do with her life, mm-hmm. what trajectory her life is going to take. And I think it provided for the viewer a wonderful way for us to enjoy what Mason himself was enjoying because in Mason's own life, there are these horrible things that are going on. Mm-hmm. You know, he's having to understand who he is as a person
mm-hmm.
and he's having to deal with all of these terrible people that are around him, which we'll talk about a little later. And, you know, he's trying to just find some sense of normalcy, whatever that means, but some sense of stability and normalcy. And that's the only constant that in his mom that he really has.
I can see that. Yeah.
And I think it's a great reflection. I was thinking about this, you know, American families have certainly changed mm-hmm. in the last 20 years. And I think, it's a very strong reflection of what's going on culturally and, some of the things that the country's having to deal with. So I found that kind of at that meta level, very powerful thing. And how are these blended, there's a lot of that blended family stuff coming into the movie.
Yeah, I think there was an interview, I don't know what interview it was, but they were talking about how like, wow, like how amazing it was that Linklater found a way to basically like underscore all of the changes that have occurred with the last 12 years, especially with like things like the internet, cell phones and stuff like that, without really trying to. And he was like, I didn't really make that a point. It just kind of came across because that's what you're working with when you're shooting literally over a 12-year span.
The transition of cell phones.
I mean, it's not like something he was thinking about like, oh, let me put like cell phones into this shot. It was just like, that's the culture now. And like the way he executes it is so seamless and natural. It's fantastic.
And in the very beginning with the Harry Potter books.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when there was that moment in like the mid-90s when that happened, and you're like, you remember that.
Yeah,
you know, and
exactly
like he had kissed that times. It was, he took the moment whenever that happened, and he expressed it very well.
That's actually the perfect segue.
There's actually a really interesting story about that. So Richard Linklater's daughter really hated that scene, that entire thing, because that's a real premiere. And she was actually with her friends, and they were all supposed to go and do it. And then I think Richard Linklater was like, we're going to shoot you, and Mason's going to come, and this is going to be a part of the movie.
Part of the movie, yeah.
And so she was furious. Like, I think she cried and stuff. And so, like, if you actually watch the scene again, because I remember this from before. I was, like, watching her. She's, like, you can see that, like, she had been crying. And she's, like, looking away from the camera for, like,
it's pretty
first
crazy.
2 or 3 minutes of that entire sequence. Because, yeah, she was, like, furious.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. So, like, one of the things he was talking about is how, like, his family is really, like, happy that the film is completed now because they wanted to deal with stuff like this.
They were, like, on call the whole time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's strange. Yeah. I thought, going back to the Ethan Hawke thing, I thought the whole bit of him being a deadbeat dad was interesting because it's, like, he's an endearing character.
Yeah.
And in most films, like, think when he comes in with the GTO, how cliche is the deadbeat dad in the GTO, right?
Yeah.
Like, you might as well just pull up in a Mustang and be like, hey, you know, I just came back from wherever, yeah, right? Yeah. I was thinking of Angels in the Outfield when the dad pulls up, okay, right? Because he's like, yeah, you know, I'm just gonna come by and say hi and then leave, yeah, right? And but there's no painting of his character in a bad way at all, right? Yeah. You're seeing him. It's not like this fucking piece of shit deadbeat dad.
I think a part of that is because, like, the audience by default is going to be like, well, he's a shitty dad because, yeah, he's barely around. Yeah. And
it's
stuff.
Also like the sense of love that the kids have for him,
yeah,
and the love that he has for them. I feel like that is, if you're going to shoot it through, like, in through the eyes of the boy, right, is like, let's forget all that stuff, how he can't even, like, financial support, I think, is a foregone conclusion. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But on that note, even despite all of these issues that Ethan Hawke is dealing with as a young man,
right,
as a young father,
uh-huh,
watching the film envelop or mm-hmm develop, I mean, it's engrossing from the standpoint that you're seeing all these people go through these various phases of their lives. But in, yeah, the Ethan Hawke character, there's this type of this rebirth and transformation where he becomes a responsible person.
Yeah.
And I think for every character that's like that, mm-hmm, much less with the kids. Because,
oh, sure, sure,
but
sure.
I think that's one of the immensely gratifying things about that, because every part of the movie, we can identify something in our own lives that mirrors,
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Or at least something very similar.
For sure. It's not only a movie about the boy. It's really... It's Patricia Arquette has, like, it's a really big thing for her.
Yeah, she has a big,
especially
family,
towards the end.
It's a movie about families.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah. And the celebration of families and,
yeah,
how they're constantly evolving, how they're changing,
even
what it
just
means,
like,
to be a member of a family.
Traditional family barriers are thrown out the window in this,
yeah,
movie, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You could do a count of the family units in this film. There's, like, 6 or 7 of them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, independent, discreet, you know, she has multiple husbands, like, Her husband, who's the professor that she goes to college.
Yeah, U of H.
Yeah. You know, they get to know each other and they end up marrying. He has a daughter and a son as well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
and that's kind of like they do the stepchild thing. And then, you know, multiple different iterations. The father has a kid when he's like 39 or something.
Yeah, he's older.
Finds,
yeah,
a woman that's amazing. You see really a cross section, like Mr. A was talking about. Of all the different kind of types of
families
in America. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I thought it was really good. What I liked about the movie, and I think you guys will probably agree, but the pacing is that, life's not about, like, smooth transitions at all. And in fact, most of the things that happen in this movie that propel it,
yeah,
are really strange and odd things that happen and come out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it's also a great way just to see how all those things unfold too. And it's also it was stressful for me. I don't know, were you guys stressed out when you're watching some of those,
yeah,
scenes?
Because, yeah,
like, they were,
especially like the Iraq vet husband, like,
oh,
the later scenes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Those scenes got me, but I think the ones that really kind of got under my skin were the where you see the dissolution of, or the breakup of, her second marriage.
Yeah.
The second marriage? Oh, yeah, the second marriage.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
When the professor descends into alcoholism. Yeah.
Jerk ass.
Professor Prick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But,
yeah,
I mean, because...
That guy did a great job, too.
I mean, that's,
yeah,
something...
He did a fantastic job.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And even the thing that's... The theme that's great about that particular part of the story is that, you know, you see him... There's some hints that he might like the booze a little bit too much.
Yeah.
But he's still... Yeah. When he's off of it, or when he's not imbibed, he's an immensely likable person. And there's a lot to love a lot about. And, a great father.
Yeah. Highly functional alcoholic.
Kind of stern, but that's okay. Yeah.
A little stern, but you know, he takes his kids out to go and learn golf. They play games together.
Yeah.
So that gradual unwinding that is kind of stressful for the viewer, I think, because you see the train it's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
And it's not going to be pretty. And when the train goes off the rails, I think, I don't know, Mr. B, what did you think about that whole arc of the movie?
Yeah, it was really interesting because basically he was her professor when she went to college and she was going to make something of herself and get a college degree.
Right.
And then he comes and hits on her very awkwardly. Obviously. In a way that's like really comical, but also
subtle.
Not very subtle at all. Yeah. Absolutely. Which is fun to watch.
It was. It was great.
But you could certainly tell, you know, later that he, as Mr. A was saying, like, is a very good father. Like, he has his heart in the right place. This was talking about transitions.
Mm-hmm.
She transitions into basically being his wife very quickly. And you can kind of see where that is because she's gone to college and she's making something of herself.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that whole moment for her and the entirety of the family, when he starts slipping down this alcoholic kind of string, is kind of disheartening because you think about his mom and you're like, you know, this is finally, she's made it. This guy is really funny. He's compelling.
Things are looking up for her.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect something like that from a professor.
Exactly right. Yeah. And then it goes so south so quick. And it's such like a disastrous type of way that, I mean, it's painful. Like there's, you know, I have a relatively rough, you know, exterior with respect to watching movies. I don't get emotionally touched as much very often. This movie absolutely went the alcoholic father being abusive towards all the kids and her.
That dinner scene is like one of the most visceral things.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So unsettling.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I think also when you're thinking about that guy, I mean, the weird thing about this movie to me and this arc that we're talking about, really, it's like Linklater has the pulse of this very strange thing that's going on, especially in the suburbs, right? Where you kind of have the unspoken problem of alcoholic parents, be it father or mother.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't have to be, I mean, things get physical, spoiler alert, right? But it doesn't even have to be about the physical. It can be about the verbal. It could be about the unspoken problems in the family and like this unwinding. That was very unsettling.
There was a moment where he got all the kids together and he took their cell phones from them. Talking about cell phones a moment ago. And he looked at their call history like one at a time.
Yep.
And he looked to his, specifically his daughter in particular. His daughter, not his stepdaughter.
Not Samantha. It's like,
I trust you. There you go.
Yeah.
I trust you. I'm not even going to look. And then, you know, he kept going down. Like the power play, the power maneuver and all of that is remarkable.
It was disgusting and crazy.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, it's the weird thing to have the writing, to have something so, it's almost voyeuristic when you're watching some of these scenes.
Because that's exactly
like
what it is.
Fly on the wall.
Yeah.
And it's done so well and so naturally.
I think that's part of the draw because we're kind of at a god's eye view.
It really is, yeah.
And we are watching these things unfold in a very organic way. Mm-hmm. And even though it sounds like the premise of the movie, the movie's about following this young boy into early manhood.
Yeah.
And that sounds something that nobody would watch, but when you actually sit there and watch it, because like I said before, all of these things that we've gone through, and you know, we're all guys, and we've all experienced those types of things.
Sure.
And so for us, it's like we have that. We look at the screen and say, "That's me up there. Mm-hmm. I've had that experience."
Yeah.
So I think that's the power of this film.
Yeah, Linklater always does a very good job at like making the characters unique in their own right, because obviously, you know, he has a story to tell, but also making them accessible to the point where like you can really envision yourself in a lot of the situations. All of his character, I mean, outside of even the Boyhood, you know, the film, like the Before Midnight Sunset, like that entire series, and you know, Dazed and Confused, like
stuff like that,
like he just does a very good job at like making the characters understandable in a very straightforward way that doesn't like seem like he's pandering or anything.
It's not
like
contrived.
Exactly. And even the moment specifically where they're talking about where he's in high school, he's with the older kids.
Yeah.
And they're at this kind of abandoned house kind of thing and they're breaking stuff.
Great
and they're talking about women, you know?
Yeah.
That was very naturalistic. Like that's very like you've slept with someone, oh, you know, she's from a different, you know, city.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah. What's her name? Yeah, what does it matter?
Exactly. Yeah. And like that was very naturalistic. And that's, I think as a guy, you absolutely have had experience like that.
I was
which goes to, there was a moment on my Facebook feed, there were some girls that were probably like 28 that saw this movie and they hated it.
Right.
They walked out of it.
You know, a lot. No, you go.
So this is this is important because as a guy, it's possible that you see this in a completely different light.
Yeah.
And if you're a woman.
I know. Yeah. One of the criticisms were like, well, dude, like this entire movie is just about this boy.
And it's called Boyhood for a reason, motherfuckers.
Basically.
Linklater's response is like, this is the story I'm telling because I was a boy. If I was a girl, or maybe I'll make one of my daughter, then it would be called Girlhood.
It would be called Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. Yeah. It's a great movie.
And it transitions into Bridget Jones.
Yeah. That's what ladies' lives are like.
And then Legally Blonde.
Yeah.
You got the whole arc. His thing was, I think, you know, being a guy and watching this film is going to be really different from being female and watching this film, just because, like, some of the stuff that they said, like, just in that one scene when they're in the abandoned house, like, some of the stuff that they say, like, if you're just coming from it from an outside perspective, or maybe someone who's not familiar with American culture, you might be like, wow, these guys are assholes. But it's like,
that's the way it is.
Well, a part of it is that's the way it is, but also part of it is like the way that they're approaching the topic isn't really how they genuinely feel about anything that they're talking about.
Yeah. Shooting the shit. And that's because everyone shoots the shit in that way.
It's a front. And like, everyone does that front, and it's important in certain situations.
Yeah.
And it isn't that. And so,
I got a question. This might get personal for everybody. But I was going to say, what scene, since we're talking about, this is a very cock-centric movie, right? It's like, it's you know, Boyhood, right? So when you talk, like, when you're watching this, Mr. A brought it up, Mr. B, you all brought it up.
Yeah.
You're watching a bit of yourself on that screen. And it's freaky. Yeah. It's freaky because it's like that universal shared experience that most guys have had.
Yeah.
Most notably in, like, schools, you know, growing up.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, what scene mostly like relates closer to you, what really struck a chord personally? And I guess I'll go and I'll just say it was the scene where they're all talking about banging the girls.
Yeah.
That one, I think that one is like most guys have gone through that. There are a lot of things in there, you know, I've never had like an alcoholic parent or anything like that.
Yeah.
But the scenes when you're interacting with other kids in schools, and it's more, it's almost painful. Looking back on something, you can't help to look back and cringe. I feel like,
well, it's a painful experience nevertheless, because I mean, all of those kids in the scene mostly were 12, 13 years old.
Yeah.
They don't even know what the fuck's going on with their own bodies.
Here.
And so they're having to talk about this.
Drink
stuff.
A beer, right?
Yeah.
And just all through that. And there are plenty of movies out there that deal with like, kind of like trials and tribulations of a teen coming of age, right?
Yeah.
And
mean,
it's like, and
Confused does that
sure,
over
right?
the summer.
And this stuff, it's at such a deeper level, and it's
elemental.
Yeah, it really is so introspective that it's almost so basic, but very deep, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like I don't know. Someone has this quote, but it's like whenever you find someone who's read the same book you have, it's like they can understand the same things the characters were going through in the book, and it's awesome because it means that someone else can feel the same things from the same material. It's kind of like that.
Yeah. You think about like that scene we're talking about in the when they're all. when they're camping, right? And, you know, that one boy is being persecuted, right?
Yeah.
And we've all seen that happen
before
and things like that, right? It's very strange and eerie. So I don't know. That was my personal connection. That's when it got real for me. I don't know what it was like for you guys.
Well, the thing that jumped out to me much later in the movie, and again, it was a very, very long movie. But at not any moment did I think it was too long.
I was very upset that it was ending.
Me too. I know. I wanted to keep going. When the transition from high school to college, when he had his high school girlfriend.
Yeah.
And they were just like, there was a moment, there was a really nice, poignant scene where they were at a party and they're like, you know, he's opening up to her and he's being very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And he's like saying things that he's like, you know, I don't normally talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
Which is a very kind of mid high school kind of thing to do, especially if you're
opening
guy.
Up.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then they broke up prior to high school. That's
prior to college.
Prior to college.
Yeah.
With the exception of her cheating on him in this case.
Yeah.
Spoiler, that's yeah, too that's late. True. It doesn't work.
It doesn't matter.
If the alert happens afterwards, it's not as effective, I found.
Yeah, it's okay.
With the exception of that part of it, that mirrored my own experience very much. And that's exactly how it was. Like, it's
that happens.
High school to college, like, that transition can't be done.
No.
And that's the first time you understand that difference and you feel lost in a way. And this whole movie's about growing up.
Yeah.
And so that one moment I thought was brilliant on his part.
That was extremely painful too, because I think it's either happened to you or it's happened to somebody you fucking know really well.
Yeah.
And they've been dreading that moment.
Yeah.
And in this movie, it also happens in the worst way possible. Mm-hmm. And again, it's the guy getting the short end of the stick, so you feel even worse as men. You know? As I just say, I mean, if he was the one cheating on, banging a cheerleader, right? We'd be like,
all right, whatever.
He never said he was going to stick with her through college.
They didn't have a promise or anything. They weren't engaged. Who gives a shit?
They're like,
different area code. Doesn't matter, right?
Yeah. No, but that was an extremely, I think the more poignant points in general for me, and maybe is for you guys, is towards the second half of the movie, the last two-thirds maybe. It's like when he's hitting that last kind of really leaving the nest feeling, and it's kind of one of those things where he's really trying to find himself. But I don't think I was as lost as this kid was.
No.
You guys feel like this guy, this character in particular, had some extra issues going on?
Yeah, he was pretty, like, he seemed to be going through, like, an existential crisis from the age of, like, 15 to 18.
Yeah.
Or wherever the movie ends. Like, it's... And at certain points, like, when he's opening up to the pretty girl, Sheena, I don't know what the actress
is. She's been in a couple movies, too. I've seen her face before. Oh. Yeah. In my dreams.
Good. Like, some of those things, it's like, well, that's kind of, like, dumb, like, angsty shit you're just spouting. But all of us here have done that same thing.
Yeah.
It's like a rite of passage.
More just like, please shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Like, when you... and I think that's why we all have that reaction. It's kind of like, well, okay. Like,
what the fuck do you know? Yeah, let me tell you something.
Years, 3 years, yeah, all the shit you're saying now is just going to sound like stupid shit.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Mr. A, you look like you're going to say something.
Well, I just wanted to answer that question. I don't know if there's a particular... I don't think it's a particular scene. I think it's a stage in the movie, but the one that really resonated with me was that scene that you mentioned, but I don't... Since you talked about that, the other one that really kind of hit me hard was the fact that, you know, when he's in his teenage years, and I wasn't ever this angsty or emo or didn't do that bullshit, but those types of... I mean, when you watch him in his early high school years, I mean, there's those feelings of anger and trying to figure out, okay, who am I as a person? What are the things that are I value? And how can I do something that I think speaks to me, right? And for him, it was in the area of photography.
Yeah.
There's this kind of this attitude that he carried around with him that, you know, it's me against the world. I've got piss and vinegar in my system.
Yeah.
And everybody else is fucking wrong.
Oh, yeah. That was a great scene, too.
Everybody else is fucking wrong. And then, you know, the football game. And then the scene where his one of his mentors just says, hey, dude, you need to fix your attitude because it fucking sucks. Basically, scene.
Yeah, it was one of those, like, I need if no one straightens you out now.
Yeah.
It was given the...
And I've had experiences like that. Yeah. And a lot of his personality mirrors my own at the time.
You feel that's like that angst that's kind of underlying the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's very hard to deal with. And when you're immersed in that, going back and thinking about that, you think that that's all that there is.
Oh, that's true.
And you think you know something about the world, which you don't.
No, yeah.
And so I thought that was a particularly powerful scene for me because it did bring back a lot of old demons, for lack of a better word.
Sure. Yeah, you could see that.
And in that particular scene, just in a color theory kind of way, that entire scene with him and his
teacher,
basically.
The dark room scene.
Yeah, it was in the dark room, so it was a red light, and it was a very aggressive thing.
Yeah.
And it was very like, you got to get your shit together kind of thing.
Yeah.
But in color theory, like, it was all red because it's a dark room.
Yeah.
And that was a really nice touch, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
So I just wanted to
make sure. Shot beautiful. Yeah. It's like the contrast. I mean, seriously, it was great. And it's just the way the teacher is, and I liked it because the speech he was given, it was something where it's like, hey, this is kind of a sense of urgency about it.
The kick,
like,
you in the ass type speech.
It's got to happen. It's got to happen now.
Yeah.
And that guy is still like, whatever, man. You know. Yeah. And it was just, I thought it was really good. I think this is going to be my major complaint about the movie was that guy.
Mason.
When the kid, when he's basically like turning to be, he's going to be a senior going into college.
15 up was not so good.
Yeah, I mean, acting. It's like, and the, I don't know if that was, and I was wondering if you guys think that, is it made specifically to annoy us because he's so fucking self-aware at that age, or is it, you know, like, was that like, as part of the design of the movie, is like, we're going to write it like this, or is it one of those things where it's like, well, I think it was just like a stupid, I think it was a stupid or weaker part of the movie.
I think it's by design.
I think it's by design too.
And you know, the reason why we're having those reactions is because, you know, we know that we were that callow when we were 15 to 18 years old.
Yeah.
So, and we probably talked that way too, where we just mumbled our words, engaged in very little conversation with our family or our siblings or whatever. So I think it was. I think that was completely natural. That didn't bother me at all because we've all either been there or we've had friends of ours who acted that exact same way.
I think I'm more on the spectrum of people who had friends that were that way. Because I don't even think I was that self. I'm still not that self-aware, right? You know, it's just like one of these guys is like, he's thinking too much.
Maybe it's maybe it's not self-awareness. Maybe
it's stupid.
Yeah.
Self-awareness, yes, but I think there's also that time when you're in high school that you're trying to come to terms with what the world is, and you think know something about it. And then so that's why you pontificate about things.
Oh, I think so too. And it's a different trajectory, I think. Like, if you think about, like, my high school experience is a little different than his. His, I think, mine was more like, I can't wait to get out of the suburbs and do some actual learning, right?
Yeah.
And go to a big school. I don't want to do this shit that I'm doing, right? Yeah. And I'm surrounded by kids who don't want to do this, for the most part.
Yeah.
Right? And but what do you think the struggles with this kid in his high school? I think it's more of an identity crisis. Why can't I do what I want to do when I want to do it? And for me, it was more like, I can't wait to get out of here. And I think there's still a bit of, I can't wait to get out of here for this guy. But I think for him, it's definitely more of, I felt like more of a big identity crisis to him. What do you think?
Yeah, kind
of. Well, I mean, if you look at the movie, I mean, he's in a consistent stage of alienation because he's always being moved around. He's having to find new friends. And so a lot of this, I think, is a reaction to everything that he's had to deal with up to leading to high school. And I think it's him coming aware of, his life has been extremely difficult up until that point.
Sure.
And I think that's a lot of that bitterness that's manifested in the way he talks to people and the way he's just lackadaisical about his work. I think that's completely natural. And I think so it's partially that issue that you talk about, wanting to do something, to find people who are like himself, because he is a unique character. Nobody else looks like him in the movie in the suburbs.
No, he's a very strange looking cat.
So there is that wanting.
Well, he has that friend, like his high school friend from later, who kind of like has that same.
Yeah, but he's not.
He's
not as emo as this cat was.
Yeah.
Well, he's
very
not
different.
As, like, intellectual. Like, he doesn't try to be as intellectual. His friend.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Just happy
so I think there is that desire to break out of the suburbs because he feels stultified there. I mean, and I think that comes home too when he's in scenes with his grandparents.
Because that's
kind of the culture from which he's being cut, and then of course there's that angst, and then that idea or that longing to find some type of identity, to find some type of rootedness. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way he can find it is in his photography.
Yeah, that's why he's clinging so much to it. I think that was interesting also going back to like the grandparents and like the moving thing. I didn't think about that until right now.
Yeah.
And how difficult it is for someone at any age. But you know, like my dad was a pastor. We bounced around three different states a couple times.
Uh-huh.
I think I moved like six different cities. Going through like six different schools.
Yeah.
Right. And you know how terrible it has to be.
Yeah.
Right. Going and how stressful it is.
Yeah.
And you see that in the scene where he gets taken out and goes to that school with nothing.
Yeah.
The kid had nothing.
Yeah.
Right. Pencils, no backpack, no anything.
Yeah, his clothes weren't clean. Like he said,
his clothes weren't clean. Exactly.
I have dirty clothes right now.
Right. And then, you know, the teacher's like, hey, you know, come on, sit down. Got a new student.
And that was really.
Right. You just feel for the kid. Right. And I think, I don't know, there's so many things to this movie that you can think about.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that we're going to do before we do like favorite scene?
I didn't do my thing.
Let's hear it.
So like the first one was actually at the very, like close at the beginning of the movie when he moved away from his original house.
You're talking about things that you related closest to.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. So like it was early in the movie whenever he moves for the first time. Cause like when I was little, like, I grew up in Irving, Texas, like, I went to school there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in, like, the middle of fifth grade, we moved to Louisville, which is, like, 20 miles away. but yeah, I just remember like the scene whenever he's leaving and his best friend is like riding his bike and saying bye to him, because that happened to me. Like,
yeah.
I remember my friends doing that whenever I was leaving, and like that really sucked.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as, I mean, that was like the late 90s, so we didn't have like internet and we didn't email and anything like that because we didn't have access to it. So that part really...
Texting wasn't a thing.
Yeah, that wasn't a thing. and then the second part was actually like the same thing Mr. A was talking about with like the early high school angst.
Because
like I did art every year of all of my non-college schooling.
Yeah.
So like I was really big into that. And I wasn't really like as emo as that kid was. Maybe a little bit during some of that period, but I mean, it wasn't a big thing. But like, I just remember like all of that stuff. I also remember having people like harp on me because like my parents were really competitive and they wanted me to go to like a really top tier school and stuff. Yeah, it wasn't like the exact same thing, but I definitely, that was like that. A lot of that hit home. It was just kind of like, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Everyone goes through this stuff.
There's so much, and it's like it doesn't even have to be exactly alike, but there's shared experiences in almost everything this guy does. I mean, especially with the girls in high school too. Right. I think that was,
Think
that's, that was really painful for me to watch. I mean, the last scene where they're just talking about the prom stuff.
Oh yeah.
Right. And it's just kind of like, wow. Right.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things like prom is so trifling. Right.
Yeah.
And it's
but
like
at the time it's huge.
Oh
and,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, watching
and
this
even
movie,
for
you
this
think
guy,
huge.
That's was the more important part, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks like a, such a big deal, even for this guy who pretty much hates his own
doesn't,
high school.
Yeah, he doesn't give a shit about prom.
Yeah.
And now, like after having prom like decades away or decade, it's trifling. But watching the movie, you absolutely remember how
like,
big of a deal it was.
Yeah,
yeah,
in a way that you like haven't remembered it in many times.
Yeah.
So
it was like
the
Super Bowl of fucking.
Because at the time, it's a really big deal, you know. But like. Of course, looking back on it, it's like, well, it's just like one night. It's not that big of a deal. But, I mean, we have years separating us and many more experiences.
I can't wait to go back to someone's date. to be.
I think we have a colleague of ours that would probably want to do something
Uncle
like pay that.
Yeah. Is eligible for any El Paso girl who wants a date. You don't have to go stag next year. Uncle Pee-Pee will
go with an attorney.
It's an 18-year-old, right? It'd be okay, right? Like,
yeah,
it would be that
sure.
Weird.
I mean, he's an uncle, right?
He is an uncle. He's a bona fide uncle. No, he's not. No, I gotta tell you about the story about his brother though after this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Let's talk this movie. We can talk about it all night long. It's just great. And I think it'll be one of those things where I know probably we'll all see it a couple times after this. I'll probably own this movie when it comes out, right? Let's talk standout performance and favorite scene.
Okay.
And do we want to go around this way, or do you want me to start and go around? Let's go this way. All right. I am going to go with I think it's going to be a tie between the actual parents.
Okay, yeah.
Because, I mean, their screen time is more limited when you compare it to. And even, like, the daughter gets kind of pushed aside.
Yeah.
After the first half.
Yeah.
But the kind of, you know, Patricia Arquette's scenes, the lines are sparse for the most part, right?
But she carries it in her face.
It's a subdued presence that you can tell, like, this is like a mother who has the weight of her children's future on her back at all times.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's just like how she conveys it. Every time you see it in a movie,
I mean,
it
starts that way when she's talking about how she's the guardian.
No,
yeah.
I mean, that is just one of those things, and you know how hard she's working.
Yeah,
and it's essentially the movie is all a struggle for her to find a sense of balance, to find a so-called happy life.
Yeah.
And in the end, you kind of realize, well, there's no such thing as like the perfect life, right?
Yeah.
So I think, Ethan Hawke was great. I'm going to go with Patricia Arquette just because I think her performance is so strong given the screen time. It's just so powerful to me.
Yeah.
And I guess my favorite scene, I really liked it when he's working at that fast food place manager talks to him.
Awesome.
That was a good little chunk of time where it's just like, goofy shit like that. And everyone had shit high school jobs. I worked at Old Navy and you're dealing with people who are genuinely nice, but they're doofuses too, right?
Yeah.
And it's like this one guy, I remember vividly this one guy from, he went to University of Cincinnati. And
cool.
We were sitting in the break
room.
Are
they the Bengals? I mean, their team are Bengals. I don't
are
know.
The University
I think
Cincinnati?
Cincinnati is also Bengals.
Oh, okay.
Or
interesting.
I think they're the Bearcats.
Bearcats.
Are they?
That
oh,
is
Bearcats.
It. That is the Cincinnati Bearcats, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there, and I'm just, like, eating my lunch, right? We get, like, a lunch break at Old Navy. And he puts on, like, Buck Cherry, you know? Like, and he's like, hey, have you heard this song, Crazy Bitch? It's great. And I'm like, oh, you guy, right?
Good.
And it's stuff like that. And the managers are ding-dongs, too, but they're, like, genuinely nice people,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm the asshole for calling them ding-dongs, you know? But, I mean, like, you have that thing. It was a great moment. And that tiny interaction with that girl, too, is very good.
Yeah,
that's the
girl.
Perfect segue, slice of life right there.
Yeah.
That weird dialogue, right? But it's so true, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Service industry.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
What you gotta do, right? And then the subtle point to the Hispanic guy or whatever. Yeah. That was my favorite scene.
Yeah.
Just because it was just like
that was great.
It just like it took you out of the movie a little bit, but you're still in it.
Yeah.
It's like a little aside to the boy's life. So Sam,
yeah.
Standout performance and favorite scene.
So my standout performance is the other parent with Ethan Hawke.
Okay. Nice.
Because he's a deadbeat dad, but again, like Patricia Arquette, gives a really strong performance whenever he's on screen. Plus, he has he probably goes through like the biggest transformation of the parents,
right?
Like adult characters. Right when the change happens, you kind of sense it, but like you get glimpses later on that shows that like he's not completely like this new super boring dude or anything like that. So it's kind of interesting because it's a very believable change. Because people do kind of straighten up, but like underneath all of it, they're still the same person.
For
it's
sure,
still, like he still loves his kids.
Yeah,
he still loves like all of the cool stuff that he used to
right
like before. He just. Can't ride around in a GTO anymore.
Right. Well, that was a great scene, too.
Yeah. I guess my favorite scene is probably... that's going to be hard because I like so many parts of the movie.
We're going through 3 hours of scenes in our minds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little tough.
How long do you think... while you think about that, I'll pose the question... How long do you think, in general, these scenes lasted? Because were they more like did it feel more like a vignette to you, or was it like, what do you guys think?
I don't know. It's kind of both. I mean, these are little vignettes, the stories that are going on, but it didn't feel like it was ever. It didn't feel chaotic or anything.
Continuity was not lost.
I mean, it was very gradual and organic.
Yeah, it seemed like there were a lot of long takes.
Mm-hmm.
The editing wasn't very abrupt at all.
Right,
because
many
times in a movie,
yeah,
exactly. You see, camera angle, two people talking, you have it from 45 degrees one way, 45 the other. This was very long takes, and it was very naturalistic, which is why I think it made it so kind
and
of emotionally
has
charged.
So much expertise doing that. From
oh my God! Yeah,
before scenes.
Absolutely.
It's
great. Yeah. These are lots of scenes, and they're all varied, and each of them is kind of all stand out in their own way. But did you think of one yet, Sam?
Yeah, I think it's the one where it's the one where he's assigned to take photographs of the football team.
It's a great scene
because, like, I have friends still from high school who are that kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were on the photography thing, and they would just fuck around and be like, "I'm just gonna shoot the people in the stands instead of caring about our garbage high school football team."
Yeah.
Where I think our senior year we won one game. So
that's impressive.
We won one game, and we're a 5A school in Texas. We're expected to win more than one game.
Okay. Yeah.
That was cool because it was another kind of like funny moment because he's fucking around.
Yeah.
But it was also cool because it's just showing like kind of how he's separate from everyone else, like how he thinks not necessarily that he's better, but he's different, like
yeah,
he's a person. So, I just like that scene a lot.
that's a good scene. All right, Mr. A, we're bringing it to you. Favorite performance and favorite scene.
Well, I'm going to have to give it to Patty Arquette. And for the reasons that you said, Andy,
good.
I mean, she was just an embattled mother.
Yeah.
And you can see that in the way that she carries herself and in the way that she speaks. And she speaks so much without having to ever say anything.
Oh, that's so true.
A really good
she
job.
Does.
I mean, and she's so believable. And I think to myself, this is Patricia Arquette from True Romance and some other throwaway crappy films.
Yeah.
She's completely believable. I can see her.
Yeah, you can see it
being somebody's mother.
I think part of it, I think, is the frantic undertones and how she thought that she's going to still. one day she'll have the answers.
Yeah.
Still, there's the tenacity that's in her exactly. face as well, that she's going to get through all of this.
She's going to have to.
She's going to make it work.
Exactly.
And so
not gonna give up.
I think that she should get some more, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Serious work?
Well, yeah, I think she should get a little bit more, some more accolades for this. I mean, sure.
Oh, she does.
Yeah, Linklater's getting it, but I think that Patricia Arquette, I mean, because she is the entire backbone of the movie, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It's the security blanket for all those kids, too.
Yeah.
Favorite scene.
You know, I'm thinking about it, and it's a scene where they're celebrating his birthday at Grandpa and Grandma's house.
Oh, awesome.
Over there by somewhere like in Conroe or the Woodlands or something like that.
Yeah.
And you can tell. I mean, you know, you could tell his dad, even though he hasn't been around that much, and his stepmom, they all love him and care for him that much, and his grandparents, you know, through marriage. I mean, they've hardly ever known him, and they treat him like one of their own. And I thought that was extremely endearing. And the fact, you know, there's a little bit of humor when, you know, Grandma gives him the Bible with all the red lettering and everything.
He's
like, I have no idea what the hell to do with this.
Yeah.
And then when Grandpa teaches him how to shoot a shotgun.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of reminded me of my own relationship that I have with my grandparents.
See, that's nice. So that's good.
It was nice.
That was a great scene, too. And those aren't even his actual grandparents, too. Right?
No. Yeah.
Those are his, like, it's like the step-grandparents.
Yeah.
So basically. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was sweet. Again, not not a traditional family, but very neat.
Very inclusive.
Yeah.
As far as best performance, I don't disagree with any of y'all with respect to Ethan Hawke or Patricia Arquette.
Yeah.
But I think it has to be mentioned that the stepfather, the professor,
ooh,
the drunk stepfather professor, is really outstanding because he was a total kind of dork. But and he's a professor, and you could tell he's doing something like you don't really know what he teaches. It's probably something that's psychological conditioning.
I think he's teaching Psych 101 because it's just behaviorism he was talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. You think he would know better, right?
Yeah.
But he's really endearing, and you know, he comes on to her in a really kind of awkward way. Mm-hmm. But you like, again, we've talked about how he plays up the father role really well. And myself, I had a stepfather, and I know how like tough it can be to try to connect.
Yeah.
And so I had a lot of sympathy for him in the way that, at least in the beginning, he was trying to.
Everyone's
you know,
making
on,
an effort.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he played the good guy really well. He played the awkward guy really well.
Yeah.
He played the drunk,
bad guy,
abusive father. It was terrifying.
Yeah.
It was bad.
I was thinking about Planet of the Apes. He did a much better job than Koba and had
Koba,
one quarter of the screen time.
Yeah, it's true. No, seriously.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of the horror movies I've seen in the past decade.
Mm-hmm.
The moment at the dinner table was one of the, you know.
That was terrifying.
It was really was.
Yeah, that was. Wait, especially because it was like a really like hard change from how, like you could kind of see it coming, but his actions, that dinner table scene was like way more intense.
I think still like, even though, because you see him in such a good light from the beginning, and you're almost hoping it's not going to be what logically
will be. Which
is
why it's that much more poignant because like this is the, you know, they're in a nice house and she, you know, they like she's made
great
it and like now she's about to get a degree
her
and
life is easier.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, also,
and then it just goes south real quick.
Super quick. And his looks too the whole time. He's a very unassuming guy.
Yeah.
He could be the guy right next door with the perfect kid going to golf.
Totally.
And
it was
store.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And his unraveling is well done too.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And I think that I think as far as like a, I wouldn't say that he's a Mr. B. Would you say he's not really an ancillary character so much as he's just in there. He's in there for one arc only.
Yeah.
But I think he had the most out of all the people who come and go in their lives. Mm. I think he had the most presence because that follows them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Throughout the rest of the movie, I think.
Yeah.
And his presence in the mother's life was like there was a turning point there, which leads into my favorite scene.
Let's hear it.
And there's so many of them. We've talked about so many of them.
Right.
The emotional presence in almost all the scenes is very, very compelling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to bring it back and talk about a more conceptual type of scene, which I thought was cool. So we talked about how the father did a Psych 101. Like the professor did that.
Yeah.
And so Patricia Arquette, when she becomes, like she gets her master's degree and she becomes a teacher
really
as well,
cool
right?
Too.
Yeah.
There's a moment when, you know, adult Mason or, you know, like 17, 16-year-old Mason comes in to see his mother teaching.
Yeah.
And you can see her so full of life and you can tell she's an amazing teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's talking about you know, cognitive behavioralism,
yeah.
which is the same thing that, you know, she was kind of with her former husband, you know, the guy that was very abusive ultimately.
Yeah.
That's the thing that she really got into.
Mm-hmm,
So you see her at the same time transcending that because she's from him.
Yeah. And her approach is completely different.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
And it's much. And so specifically she talks about attachment.
Yeah.
A very specific that study that talked about.
Bowlby up in this bitch. Was it Bowlby?
Yeah. 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 yeah exactly. Yeah.
That was with the monkeys.
And yeah. The monkeys. Yes. Yeah.
Studies about how, you know, primates essentially the necessity of a mother to attach to their young one mm-hmm. is a necessary survival instinct, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And so that for me kind of like echoed throughout the entire movie because yeah. you have the relationship to them. And so that moment when she's doing her very academic lecture,
mm-hmm.
doing
oh,
it
sure.
in a very like kind of humanistic way,
yeah.
and he's watching that, there's so much going on in that scene. Mm-hmm. It's yeah. so nice. And it
That's
just kind
really
of echoes throughout
too.
The rest of it.
It was a great
so.
Scene. Yeah. And that was a great payoff scene to see
yeah.
her doing what she's doing,
that.
Doing it so well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a great scene. Yeah. Now we're going to get to the hard part, I think, which would be like, what did you not like? And if there's a least favorite scene. So what you didn't like in general and a least favorite scene, I guess I'll start it off. And I think I have more to complain about than most of you guys.
Perhaps.
Right.
Perhaps.
I didn't like Ethan Hawke's music bit throughout the whole thing.
Oh, like when they would play
yeah.
songs?
Yeah, I didn't like the whole song thing. And when that girl plays Wish You Were Here, I was like, fuck you, Linklater. Of course he's good. And why would you play it? It's like, you can't
Pink
do
Floyd
that.
Deserves better.
And Animal House did away with that scene forever. You can't have a scene like that.
Yeah.
They just needed John Belushi to show up and break the fuck out of that guitar.
Yeah, I mean, they should have. And then, yeah. You know, the singing. I get that the dad's the aspiring musician. And I
yeah.
like how that kind of came around at the end. At
seems
Antone,
cliche.
Right? Yeah, right. It seems, well, Reality Bites,
yeah.
right? Ethan Hawke was an aspiring musician in that. I like Reality Bites, right?
Yeah.
Ben Stiller's, I think, was that his first directorial debut? I think
know.
It was, right? But it's just like, Ethan Hawke, okay, he's going to be the aspiring musician again. I don't like that, right? Use of music with them singing and all that stuff, I thought that was strange. Because I don't think at that time when they're singing at the grandparents' place, I don't think those kids would be caught dead singing with their stepmom and their dad at that point in time. Right?
Probably not.
Right?
Probably
and they, not. That dude sucked at singing, right?
Yeah.
So and he's so fucking self-aware, he should know he doesn't know how to sing.
Yeah.
Right?
Tone deaf.
So the music.
Very weird.
I didn't like that use of music and Ethan Hawke doing the music thing.
Yeah.
I also didn't like the last bits of the movie so much.
Oh, like the very end when
the hike.
At UTEP?
Yeah, I didn't like that last bit at UTEP. I thought it would have been great if he met everyone and like, do you want to go? And he's like, yeah, boom, cut it right fucking there.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
That's why I would have liked it like that. That would and but then,
I would have cut. I would have cut it earlier.
Yeah.
You would have cut it early. Okay,
I would have said, you know, in that they have that crane shot of him driving
the,
through
the
Big
Toyota.
Ben.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like
cool.
cut.
That would have been great.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, I don't know why he wanted to bring it out one more time and just do that thing. It's like, maybe it's because of that loss of the girl. And then, you know, that
yeah.
whole
thing. I don't know, man. I'm with
really
you there.
Cool,
yeah. And also, at this point in time, Mr. A needed to go to the
I had to make
palace.
I'd really take a major piss.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. yeah. I mean, I feel like this is all very minuscule.
Yeah.
And in fact, the last bit isn't as bad to me as the music. The music was the big detractor for me.
Okay.
And I'll say my least favorite scene was the scene where they're singing with the stepmom in front of the grandparents,
yeah.
and the grandparents are just smiling, watching them. Because I get it. It's like, if you want to do, you would, you know, the Von Trapp family would play for their grandparents for sure, right? It's just
yeah.
to make the grandparents happy. But these kids, they're gonna do this to make the grandparents, I don't know. It seemed
yeah.
a little weird.
Yeah.
But that's just the only minor detractor, and that's my biggest complaint about the movie.
Yeah.
That and the end. What about you, Sam?
So, my major, like, qualm with the film is after Mason hits about 15, like,
yeah.
his acting ability
shoots
way
yeah,
down.
It's noticeable. It is noticeable.
It's awesome. It's like he forgot how to be a normal boy.
He's like, but then I felt like, maybe, did you guys get the feeling that he kind of had, like, a little fruitiness to him towards the end when he was talking? I thought
he kind of reminded me of that guy that was on American Idol several years
ago.
Yeah,
he sounded kind of Mr. Aiken.
No,
Mr.
not
Clay
Mr. Aiken. No, the other guy. The other guy with the black hair.
Reuben yeah. Studdard.
I don't know.
That would have been amazing. amazing.
That would be great.
He just starts talking like Chef the entire time.
You know the one I'm talking about. You know the one I'm talking about.
My dad was really confused when that guy came on because he thought that that was a woman.
Oh, yeah. Well,
like,
I just...
The first couple of weeks. He's I like, just felt... That's not a man.
His acting, it happened. It was noticeable. And yeah. I think, I don't know if like the writing just didn't match up, but I mean, he's like, I just don't fucking know what's going on. I'm like, what is this guy doing?
Yeah, that was, I mean, that was...
he's trying to act.
Yeah, that was one of the things. That was one of the things. The other thing was that, like, all of us were angsty at some point, but we kind of got, like, rid of it when we were going to go to college because it's like, oh, new people, and, like, I don't have to live with my parents anymore, so I don't have a reason to be angsty
things
anymore.
Things were generally happier.
This kid, however, maintains his angst for no... Yeah. I mean, like, I get it. You don't like technology or whatever, but it's not that big of a deal.
Oh, I felt that was a contrived conversation.
Just really the end parts of the movie started. Like, they went to Continental Club. We're all... three of us are Longhorns right here.
And one of us is an Aggie.
Yeah.
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 One of us made the right choice.
Three of us made the right choice. One of us betrayed the Big 12 and went to the SEC.
And we're raking in that fucking SEC money,
they
bitches.
They are really raking in
they
that
are.
Money.
You really are, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have infinite money at UT. $100 million. It's like, oh, Nick Saban, we'll pay you $100 million to come like coach for 2 years. It doesn't fucking matter.
And he still said no.
Yeah.
But Continental Club.
But they went to the Continental Club, which is like where old people go.
No one goes. I mean, I went to go see Junior Brown at the Continental Club.
Yeah, like they went from San Marcos, right? Because you went to San Marcos High at that time.
And then they went to a dive bar, probably 36,
somewhere in 36. That's not a big thing. Like, a lot of people do that. Yeah. But like, they went from San Marcos to Austin to go to Continental Club to watch a bluegrass band?
Well, they were high schoolers, though. They probably don't know what the difference is. It's possible.
That's true. That would be amazing.
You're right.
Age,
I know.
No.
That's a level of complexity that we're not going to give it. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Go to emo, Stubbs, like anything. Mohawk is like near content. Yeah,
oh, I love Mohawk. I love the Mohawk.
Stuff like that. Yeah, that was just... But, I mean, we could be nitpicky because...
Well, also Continental Club is SoCo. You're not going to go from Dirty Six to SoCo unless you really want to go to the Continental Club.
Plus, the scene of Kirby... I mean, basically...
Okay, it's
Kirby.
Like poser Kirby Lane.
So, yeah, there's a scene where they're eating queso at 3 in the morning, and there are very few places in Austin that will serve that. Really, Magnolia, which their queso isn't that particularly remarkable.
You don't go to Magnolia for the queso.
Yeah, that's not what people do. But like Kirby Lane, people do that. So like, you could tell it was supposed to be Kirby Lane, but for whatever reason, they didn't just make it Kirby Lane.
Yeah. I don't know why.
Strange choice, because it's,
yeah.
It's obviously Kirby. It's also, that place was way too clean. We talked about this last night.
It was way too clean, and they weren't playing death metal music.
Yeah. Like, I want diarrhea the next morning. That's when you know you go to Kirby Lane.
Yeah.
What you pay for.
Yeah. Yeah. Excuse me, I'll have the squirt queso. Yeah. No.
You squirt later, not now. So that stuff was just nitpicky. But really, the big thing was just how bad Mason's character got after he hit 15. It was remarkable. Like, after, it was actually, I think, immediately after the darkroom scene. It was the darkroom scene forward. Like, he had some good scenes with, like, the girlfriend, Sheena, and, like, they had okay chemistry. But other than that, like, his character was just, like, rehashing shit that he had said.
The extended dialogue was kind of what did him in, I think.
Yeah. And the end was bogus. They should have clipped it, like...
That's a great Mr. A's clip, I think, is a really good idea. Yeah. That's, like, kind
of
like the dumb and dumber shot when you're going on the road trip.
Or right when he gets to college and he meets his really cool roommate.
Yeah, it's like, you know...
Just clip it there. That's okay.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you want
to
come?
Do some shrooms and go to Big Ben. That's not a big deal. We don't need to see that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Mr. A, what you got?
Well, my criticism extends right to what you just said, Sam. I didn't need the last 20 minutes of the movie. I don't want to know who his fucking friends are. I don't know if they're as strange as he is. I don't care. And you know what? All of those people that he met in the last 20 minutes of the movie, I mean, they're fucking cliches.
That's the thing
almost sunk the movie for me. Hey, you want a fucking pot brownie? Well, of course he does, because you know you've been telegraphing this the entire movie. I don't need to see that, I don't need to see like the Garden State shot where two bohemian kids go out into a rock and they yell at the universe because they think that the universe owes him something.
Yeah.
Kids, let's learn a lesson right now. The universe doesn't owe you shit. Neither do your parents. Go get a job. And then I would have beat the shit out of that Carrot Top anyway if he'd done something like
that. That was really like predictable. Like in my head, it's like, oh, you just saw Darjeeling. Like you're just gonna do that now.
Also,
I mean, well, and that's the thing. The movie was great because it was not predictable. Yeah. But when it got up to that point, it's like, okay.
It became like, I know what's gonna. And like the very last talk he has with the girl is the same basic talk. Sheena, like.
And I don't care. I don't care. I don't want you to telegraph to me. I think as a viewer, you know, I think we're all sophisticated movie watchers. I think the best thing would be, you know. Well, he's going on to that next journey, and I think that's all
you
can.
That's the end
had.
Of the boyhood, right
that's
there.
That's the end of it. Yeah. And you can figure out whatever is going to happen to him, and I think that's part of it. No answers.
Yeah, you don't know if it's going to work out him leaving the nest or if he's going to crash and burn. I think that would have been a great thing because that's truly, awesome. Really, with kids like this, you don't know.
But here it spoon feeds you an answer, and that pisses me off
also,
more than anything else.
Do you guys think that guy would have been friends with his roommate from the get-go when he saw him?
No. No, I would have. If he were my roommate, I would have kicked his ass.
That's the thing. Well, it's like
I would have broken his fucking nose in the first 5 minutes.
I mean, they're friendly, and I get being cordial with your roommate initially, and then doing something like that. But those guys don't seem like the two to get along.
It's too fucking contrived.
I mean, I actually had like this almost the same experience that Basin had when he met his roommate on the first day. And I became really good friends with Corey. He's a great dude.
I had three roommates from UTSA.
They're great.
Yeah.
But that's my main criticism of the movie because everything else is so well done. You know, you don't want to sink it just because you fucked up the last 20 minutes of the movie. And that's what kind of really pissed me off.
And like the tone really kind of shifted in a weird way, which was not good.
I think maybe it's just because they kind of lost the momentum when they were making it. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, the interesting thing about that, too, is like my least favorite Patricia Arquette scene is that one. Like it's good, but it's also bad at the same time. Like she has like the mom breaking down, the kids leaving the nest, and she's having this weird crisis like, this is it. This is the end of my life. It's like, well, it's like, I think this. I'm sure you feel that way.
It feels tacked on.
It's tacked on, and they have to have a bookend to her bit, but it's not really the end of her life. It's like, well, you're going to.
You're 40 years too early.
You might have grandkids. You have so much more to look forward to.
Yeah.
That's why I was like,
Botox injections.
She still had a nice rack, you know? It's fine. Yeah.
I mean, you got that's two assets that you got that
you get your car
in this world.
And moving into her apartment and stuff like that. I mean, it's just some extra things, a bookend to a movie, and in life, where are the bookends?
I think if they just lopped off the last 25 minutes, the movie would have been fine. Right. But that's my major criticism.
And how big of a complaint is that for you, though? It wasn't a huge detractor.
But it was almost like, I would compare it to this. You're enjoying a nice 7-course meal.
This is how he always likes to do it. Yeah, okay, here we go.
It's a nice 7-course meal, and then the waiter decides to show his wang in front of you and jerk off in your fucking ice cream.
Is it Uncle Pee-Pee?
Pee-Pee.
It could be Uncle Pee-Pee, or,
See, last time it was you're enjoying a 7-course meal, and then a waiter comes by and takes a shit on your plate. So I'm glad you went from... it's a good...
There's some consistency here.
Yeah. That's good.
It's bad nevertheless, so...
It was just a jarring change.
Yeah.
It was a jarring change, and he's too smart of a filmmaker to do something that fucking stupid.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, that's good. That's harsh, but that's a good... Now, Mr. B, let's hear it from you.
Well, I'm certainly not as much of a foodie as Mr. A is. But
connoisseur.
With this color, yeah, exactly.
A crap connoisseur.
My dining experience was certainly overall very, very good.
Good, yeah.
But I'm actually going to agree with, I think it sounds like all of y'all,
sure,
and we're going to be unanimous in saying that the very end was, you know, kind of a bit of a let off. And you know, for reasons that y'all have discussed, I largely agree with. For me, you've grown to care about this kid because you've seen him from 5 to 7 years old.
Yeah.
Like you really want him to do well. And like you, he's like a jerk off teenager and everyone is. And
yeah,
like,
sure,
you know,
sure, sure.
You know, so, so the moment that his roommate comes in, which we talked about.
The dopey guy.
Yeah. You can tell that, like, he might not even come back to school next semester.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Come back to school tomorrow.
Exactly.
That's the thing,
yeah.
He moved in, and he's going to be the guy.
Which is the
experience
I had.
Oh, okay. Well, you turned out marginally well. Okay, fair enough.
Man, he might not show up next week. That's cool. Yeah.
So it ended, on a realistic note, because that's what happens.
True.
You know, because, like, you just, you know, take a pot brownie first day of, you know, first week of school, very likely.
Yeah.
I thought it was shrooms.
No, it was a brownie, pot brownie.
No, he had a shroom poster up, which was very...
I know at A&M we never had any of that bullshit. No, just kidding.
I was gonna say, you guys had the potato shack at A&M, right?
Potato shack. The favorite place yeah. of a certain
so
student.
I'm prone to be on the side of realism because that actually is what happens. And if we're going to just tell a real story, that's like a real one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've grown to love this kid, and then I can see his life about to get derailed, and that makes me kind of all this work.
Yeah.
Cause you put in 3 hours of your life watching this.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, and now he's gonna fuck it up
for
you. Gonna,
you want
yeah.
him to succeed.
What? Totally. Okay, yeah. So yeah. Mr. B, do you think he graduates college?
I don't think he does.
I don't think he does either.
No, I can't string words together, frankly. So I don't know. You yeah. know, he's not going to pass English.
Exactly. No, that's true. He's
I mean,
like,
I think the EMTs come to pick him up in a rubber bag.
Oh, Jesus.
Dude, I think he's going to be fine. I knew a lot of those fine arts kids, and they did all right, even though
well,
took
I mean,
like
and
6 to 7 years.
He
I know
also,
some, too, and they're problematic people.
Yeah, but they're still, I mean, like, they still made it. It just
well,
took
also,
them a lot longer.
UTEP. It's UTEP. It's
oh,
UTEP.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you it's, know.
He's probably having at UTSA. We've
again, the EMTs come to pick him up. In
canyon somewhere.
Yeah. That's where Ed, they all just die in the fucking canyon, right?
It turns into 127
the
hours.
The guy screams so, yeah. He screams and falls over. Yeah, but I mean, that's actually good. That's an interesting take on it, because at that point, I already started hating that guy before he went to college.
Yeah, I did too.
Because he's a little twat, right? Yeah.
That was.
And I mean, I really thought that last bit with him and Ethan Hawke was a great scene, though.
Oh, that was awesome.
That was great.
And his brother.
Yeah, and the understanding between like a young man and he's like, hey, you know, keep on keeping on, right? That was great, right?
Well, what I really liked is like, so a lot of this movie is kind of like in a traditional movie or like a typical movie, like when you have like a hero and a villain, you know, the hero saves whatever, and then the movie just ends.
Yeah.
What's really cool about this movie is it's basically what happens after that for 12 years.
It's like the unwinding of a partnership.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
But not like a corporation.
Not like a corporation. No, it's just like you got to close up shop.
Yeah.
Set all
you
your debts.
You need to stop talking about this shit.
Pay your creditors.
Creditors.
No more liabilities. Yeah. Yeah.
I hope you didn't share liabilities equally, because
nope,
that could be a total
nope.
bummer.
Profit sharing is the main thing to look at, though. I mean,
don't incorporate in Texas. Let's go to Delaware.
I don't remember any of this from the movie. Y'all are that's
we are disturbed.
I need to see this again. Apparently,
what I really liked is actually, you know what? This might be like my second favorite scene. It's
okay.
Just the very end. Whenever you know, it's not the very end. I mean, like the last scene with Ethan Hawke and
at Antone's
Mason. Yeah, at Antone's. Yeah. And they're you know just having that band play. And, like, at some point, Mason is just like, well, what's the point of any of this? And, like Ethan Hawke just drops, like, an awesome knowledge bomb where he's just like, I don't understand. Like, that question doesn't make any sense.
He laughs at the kid.
Yeah,
he's like,
he laughs at him because, like, that's not a question to ask. It's just, like, you just kind of do stuff and you figure things out all along and no one really ever figures it all out.
Yeah.
That's the that's the point. You're not supposed to ever figure all this stuff out.
It's a very Linklater kind of conclusion.
Now, did that kind of end, did it depress you guys at all?
No.
I
was depressed a little bit.
I think if it was a different tonal movie and like you don't get to know Ethan Hawke's character the way you do get to know Ethan Hawke's character, which is one of the reasons why he's one of my favorites. I think the way that Ethan Hawke delivers it isn't supposed to be like a depressing thing. Like,
oh yeah, no, it's not supposed to be depressing. It's like, hey, you know, we don't know what we're doing, and it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, and I kind of took it that way too, where it's like, you know what, like, I mean, we're all law graduates, and like none of us really know what's gonna forward.
And that's the thing about the movie too. It emphasizes the fact that our parents, they probably had no idea what the fuck they're doing, and they probably still
don't
know what the hell they're doing.
But the message that he has is, you know, just kind of be optimistic about it and things will fall into place.
Yeah.
Enjoy the ride, motherfucker. Yeah.
And I think that's a much better moral than, you know, the Dorcas dad or like the Iraq vet dad, you know.
Oh yeah. That was depressing.
Yeah. That was depressing.
Yeah. Mr. B, you look like you have something to say, no?
Yeah.
Oh, he's good. Okay. Okay, now we're going to get to the last rating we will ever fucking do.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's kind of sad.
It's a little sad.
Out of a 10-point scale, as usual.
Yeah.
Right? And out of 10, why, where does it rank for you amongst the movies that you've seen recently? Oh, so we're going to do the ratings, right? We're talking out of a 10-point scale and where it ranks amongst the movies you've already seen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, lately, recent movies you've seen in the theaters, and I guess what it means to you, because this was a powerful movie, no doubt. And I guess the question is, how much power did it have over you? We gave it a night to digest.
Yeah.
in our brains. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, to be honest.
I mean, just the fact that this was filmed over 12 years, that alone should be enough.
That's crazy.
Like, wow, I have to think about all of the stuff that happened to me over the last 12 years. Or like, you know, just that perspective is completely different in scope from,
it's true. It's a lot to think about.
TMNT.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. So
it should be absorbed in less than 2 minutes.
Do we want to do it? Which way do we want to go? Let's go. Okay, we're going to hit it. Mr. B's up. Out of a 10, and why would this movie mean to you?
For me, it's a pretty clear 9.
Okay.
Solid.
10 is, transcendent. For me, the 12-year span is remarkable. There's one thing that Linklater said about this movie that, unlike other movies where you have a screenplay that you work off of, mm-hmm. you have basically an entire year. You shoot a scene, and then you have an entire year
to think about
like what the next one is going to be.
Yeah.
So much thought went into each scene, and I think that really comes through.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, for me, that's really why. Because I loved really every scene, and I didn't want it to end. It was a long movie. I did not want it to end.
No, it's true.
Although it should have ended sooner. But frankly,
an intermission would have been nice.
Yeah,
draft
possibly.
House, what the fuck? I thought that was beef.
Yeah, totally.
I needed to tinkle.
Yeah.
But I really love this movie. It's rare that you see a movie that makes you so nostalgic and hits you where you are.
Yeah.
Because you have these big sci-fi awesome movies that are cool and fun.
Mm-hmm.
But this really made me think about myself, which frankly I love thinking about, but in a way that's, really healthy, I think. So.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I'm going to give the movie a 9.5.
Okay.
And
that's extremely high for Mr. A.
Yeah. And I was going to give it a 10, but.
What? I think it might be the highest for you.
Well, I've given a 10 before.
Your 10 was?
I think it was for Sorcerer.
Sorcerer. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what
but
it was.
I mean, I'm a little biased, but I think the reason why I give it a 9.5 is just because, aside from the last 20 minutes, if they hadn't fucked that up, it would have been a 10 in my book. I would have given
that's
it
great.
A 10.
Yeah.
And it's just. It's kind of like I said, it's just that it's a bitter note after a really great viewing experience.
It's always tough to have such a weird ending.
Right. It's like you're listening to a great concert and somebody plays a wrong note.
Oh, yeah.
Or just like there's some vuvuzelas that are thrown in.
Or someone, or the city shuts down the lights because of the sound ordinance.
But I do think, Richard Linklater, out of all of his work, and there's a lot to be admired about it.
Yeah.
I think this is the zenith of what he's ever done. And he may not get any better than it. I don't know.
I think he's
going to get better when next year he's going to be like, fooled you guys, been working on a 20-year project.
Yeah.
Well, he's got
manhood.
What happens to the kids in Slackers?
Oh.
Enjoy.
I would watch the shit out of that.
Yeah.
But I mean, he is a constant. I think for me, it was just a powerful viewing experience, really. Mm-hmm. Because like Andrew said, I think a lot of us have said before.
Yeah.
There is so much in that movie that resonates with anybody because irrespective of whatever those things happen to you, mm-hmm. In that exact same manner, it doesn't matter because we've known people who've done that or we've had experiences that have almost gotten that way or could have gone that way.
Yeah.
Sure.
And because it's kind of that God's eye view of just life happening so organically and so almost in kind of a meditative fashion.
Yeah.
I think that's the engrossing thing about that. Even though this is a 3-hour long movie, you never notice that the time is that long because it just envelops you.
The experience is...
It's an experience movie.
That's really what it is.
That happens to be about these people who are trying to make sense of what their lives are and they're trying to do the best that they can.
Yeah.
They fail most of the time, but they still keep on going. And I think that movie has a lot of optimism about it.
The spirit in it.
Yeah, it's the spirit in it. It's never... And it never comes across... overtly.
Oh, that's true.
It's always churning there in the background. So I thought it was a powerful movie experience, and I think it's a strong 9.5.
Nice.
But I do strongly believe that it could have had some scissoring at the end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's anything with scissoring is always fun.
But that's a minor criticism in light of a great movie.
Yeah. Okay, Sam, let's hear it.
So when we first started, I mean, we alluded to The Tree of Life, which
yes.
I gave a 10, which
you
I still stand by because that movie.
That movie's great.
Movie.
Yeah.
That movie's ending was great.
The movie ending, that ended
in a lot
great.
Of ways, like, I've been kind of teetering between a 9.5 and a 10
yeah.
because the faults that the movie has up, like, before the begin, before the very ending, they're, like, not really that big of a deal. It's like, oh, you said a dumb line, or that was kind of cheesy, but who cares? Mm-hmm. Everyone's cheesy. You know, it's not that big of a thing. But the ending really does kind of, like, leave with sort of a sour note. Like,
It's so stereotypical, considering what we've just been through.
And especially because it's Linklater, who knows, like, I know you know how to end films, dude. Like, I watched the entire before, like, all of the series. Like, I know that you can end them abruptly and you don't give a shit. You could have done that here, and that would have been awesome, but you didn't do that. So that kind of thing, that kind of brought it down a little bit. So I'm going to give this a really strong 9.75.
Oh!
I did like
changing
it
up.
More than a 9.5.
That's very precise.
The co-founder of the podcast, I guess, can break the rules for the last podcast.
Yeah,
sure.
Whatever.
Why not? Yeah. He's going to give it a 12.
Out of 12 and a half.
Yeah.
9.75, because it's a really good, it's a really, really good movie. I agree with everything Mr. A and Mr. B said. Not surprising. It's very, very touching. It's a very meaningful film experience. I know Andy talked about, like, kind of the movies we've seen recently. We've seen Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
All those movies are really cool. I think I like watching Guardians of the Galaxy more because it's kind of pleasant and fun to see. But
that's it's a popcorn movie.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a popcorn movie, which, you know, nothing wrong with. That was an awesome popcorn movie. But this is like a very good, like, kind of meaningful movie that was kind of in the same vein of The Tree of Life, apart from just that, you know, it's a coming.
I thought more after this movie than I did with The Tree of Life. And The Tree of Life was, I think, I like The Tree of Life better.
Yeah, I did too. I think I did also, but that's probably because The Tree of Life is like a Terrence Malick, like, existentialism trip.
Yeah.
And this is more of like a, hey, like, think about
Tree of Life
yourself.
Isn't necessarily about everyone, though.
Yeah.
This is totally, this is real world New Orleans, man. Yeah.
Thanks, MTV.
Yeah.
So, 9.75. I thought it was very good.
That's great. Now, I think I'm going to give this one a 9.
Okay.
And it was like I almost put it at 8.5 because of the ending.
Yeah, that
and we're leaving.
Really was a fart.
You know, yeah, it was. And I like the movie. I do enjoy. I like Tree of Life better.
I do too.
But I don't think, and I think it's almost. Last night though, it was for sure like I like Tree of Life better, and now they're closer than I thought they were.
Yeah.
A day later.
What did you rank Tree of Life?
I gave Tree of Life, I think I gave Tree of Life a 9.5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, but I really think if you compare the two, I think this movie has a stronger beginning and the ending is way better in Tree of Life.
Yeah, I agree. Plus, I mean, like, just from the perspective of the film shot, like, Boyhood is way accessible. Like we mentioned earlier, anyone could see this movie, especially if you're a dude, and just be like, that was me at this age. Or
it's
that was
weird.
My friend at this age.
The experience you get is different.
It's eerie how visceral it makes you feel, whereas The Tree of Life is just like a different take on it.
It's
not for everyone.
No, yeah, I mean, people would turn off that movie after the first act, I think.
After Sean Penn goes away, and he's like billed as a big thing.
Yeah. But I'm giving this one a 9. I thought it was good. The experience, I don't think we've gotten a viewing experience like this. I didn't see Tree of Life in theaters, so this is the closest I was going to get to something like that, I think. And it was one of those movies where you're sitting, we were talking about it, talking about how it shot, how pretty it was, and how great it was. But it's a lingering feeling where it's like that was almost, it was too real. And that's exactly what he was going for. And I think that is to be respected because everything he wanted to get through to you came through in the best way.
And he succeeded.
Didn't hit you over the head with it.
Yeah.
And we talked about Slacker a moment ago.
Yeah.
Like, his style generally, like, this is kind of, I mean, you can see his style evolving, but this is like what he does. This is very Linklater type movie. Which is very visceral, very real.
So true.
Very conversation based, but also not necessarily a, you know, proscribed way.
Well, and what I also really liked is all of his other movies, all of them. I mean, taking the Before series, like, you know, one by one, they're all pretty short, like, amounts of time. Not like a thing where, you know, you watch a kid grow or you watch like a lot of time pass. This is his first movie where a lot of time passes, and so, like, I mean, if he's gonna pull this off I mean, of course, 12 years. But he's executing it so well in this type of story. Like, I'm excited to see what he's coming
and
to do.
The consistency. Forward. I mean, you know, it's remarkable. Maybe the editing, they cleaned that up, but it was a consistent film, which over 12 years is hard to do.
Yeah, especially. Because
as a director, like, you change your
He's doing lots of other projects in between.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, it's very interesting.
Fast Food Nation.
The continuity of this movie, you can't really... The flaw, I think, is that weird...
Just that last part.
That last part. And you could have cut it. And I'm glad we all felt that way. And it's in the grand scheme of things, it's nitpicky, but at the same time, it was so good.
It's a big part of, it's so good, and you kind of, like, fell out the finish line.
Yeah, and I was wondering, I'm surprised that IFC, you know, I don't think it was, like, a forced decision on his part. You know, it wasn't, I don't think the studio was like, no, you got to make it, like, a better ending.
Oh,
you know?
No, yeah.
He totally wanted this thing. Right?
But no one is controlling Linklater in anything
he does. No. But it's a very good movie. I'd go see it ASAP. Mr. A, Mr. B. This is it. This is like happy trails.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been fun. Yeah, it's been a good time.
Yeah, I can say that we've watched a lot of very controversial, very endearing films, and
Sharknado,
I hope that
too.
Our listeners, Sharknado, all three of them out there in the world, appreciate the selections that we've had over the past
It was
couple
fun,
years.
And thank you to all those people that listened to us.
Yeah, thanks for all the people that, you know, dropped in on the podcast.
Know. We were literally in the thousands of downloads. So
that's
people,
right, folks, above 100.
Above 100, people actually listened to us.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I'm gonna miss you guys.
I'm gonna miss you guys too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks as always for listening. Tell us what you thought about Boyhood, you know, once it comes around to you, because it's kind of having a weird release right now. I think all of us can say, you know, watch it for sure. And we really appreciate you guys listening to us. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.